On this week's show, could siloed data be your silent productivity killer? With Bob Salai from QuickBase. In this week's news, is it time for construction to set the record straight on innovation? And more.
Construction is the world's oldest industry, but spends the least amount of money on innovation. When we realized people outside the construction industry didn't typically associate construction with technology like virtual reality, apps, and robotics, we started the ConTech Crew. Each week, we bring our listeners the latest in ConTech news and interview the minds behind the technological innovations changing the way we build. So strap in, enjoy the ride, and geek out. It's ConTech Crew time.
All right, we're here. I love when an episode comes out of searching people out for the things they put out in the world. Nathan, are you ready for this one?
I mean, ever since you shared that article, which not to foreshadow anything, but I'm excited to dive into this.
Yeah. For those of you, Nathan is referring to an article on gray work that we'll dive into. But our guest today, Bob, and I met up, did some work together, and they introduced me to this idea of gray work. And I was like, we got to bring you on and talk. He's from our world. Good background. Good morning, Bob. How you doing, man?
Good morning, everybody. Thank you. Thank you for having me on today's show. Really excited to be here.
Yeah, we are excited to dive into this one. I feel like productivity has been this... I don't know if I want to call it a hammer. I don't know if I want to call it some overarching dark cloud or silver line, something, but it has just been out there, and I'm just excited to sit down and talk to you.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm excited. I mean, this is a topic that is just continuing to evolve over time, and I'm excited to see where we're at. We're at the precipice of something.
Yeah, I think you're right. So give a little bit of your backstory, introduce the folks to Bob, and we'll kind of dive into how we came around to all the stuff that's going on out there.
Yeah, absolutely. So just real brief background on myself. I went to school at Penn State way back in the day, graduated mechanical engineering, and ended up joining GE right out of the gate and really went through there. I was a mechanical engineer by trade. Did that for about 2 months of my life and realized I'm really more into operations, process management, and how do we actually figure out some problems and figure out some solutions quicker. So after a few short stints at various Fortune 500 companies, working with probably one of the first evolutions of low-code, no-code software that was out there, realizing that this is a space that can come together with lean techniques and digital transformation. In bridging the gap, and been trying to send it out there like a helix of DNA of how it actually intertwines together and solves problems has been exciting for me. So I actually spent quite a lot of time in manufacturing. I had some time within healthcare as well, dealing with doctors and process management and process improvement. And except for the last decade, honestly, been within construction to do the same. So I was brought on board to a contractor to implement a lean program. And it took me 2 days, Jeff, to realize that we need to find a way to improve the data that we're getting out of the company. It would take us weeks to run a report. And it was something that I just thought was unacceptable. So we started introducing this low code, no code software, QuickBase, into the fold and understanding how that begins to like bridge the gap. How are these departments who have siloed information just struggling to talk to one another, especially in this day and age, and then just share that information across the board? So I've actually spent a lot of time process mapping from the beginning stages all the way through the value streams of contractors. Not just for the one that I was working for, but we started actually branching out and doing that for other contractors out there. So it gave me a good overview of all the processes and where that gray work and where that issues might be found in between other processes.
So I want to dive right in because one, I mean, that was an awesome background. We were totally cut from the same cloth, except just manufacturing versus construction, right? Which we could have a whole aside on that. But I guess, how do you attack, or I guess what challenges have you found in coming to construction from manufacturing, where I feel like there are certain processes where as much as you try and map them, the only answer you can get from them is, well, it depends on this or it depends on that. And they're like, there isn't a single way you can do it. Have you found any of those like specific workflows or things that are that way? Or have you been able to get around all those complains?
So there's actually two things that come to mind. In manufacturing, this is something that I would actually preach out to the contractors I would work with, right? When you deal in manufacturing, you're dealing with very tight tolerances, whether that be on the manufacturing floor and what's going through with that. Construction, you come in, every job's different, right? Well, this and that, it's going to be different how it is. Those tolerances are way high and low. But the purpose of lean is just to kind of minimize that a little bit more. Everybody's talking about standards, SOPs, how do we standardize? How do we move forward with it? Everybody wants it. So yes, bridging the gap of it, saying, hey, listen, it can be better. I get it that most jobs have their unique tendencies, but it can be better overall at the end of the day for it. But the other thing that came to mind, Nathan, when you said that was, here's what I found in construction. People want to get it done. They're proud of how we can come into this and solve problems. There are more productivity thinkers, creativity thinkers within this industry that I've ever seen in manufacturing, my personal opinion. They know that we're going to have to roll up our sleeves and we're going to have to figure this out to get the job done. And I loved it. And I fell in love with the industry instantly.
That's awesome. Cause you hit on something in manufacturing with those tight tolerances. There is a specific group of people. You know, yes, lean means everybody and everybody's supposed to keep their eyes out on it. But let's be honest, as you get up the chain in manufacturing higher, there's a certain group of people that are leaning out the processes, looking at the process. Everybody else is sort of doing their job. In right. construction, it's somewhat of a firefight every day. So everybody's a problem solver. Everybody's had to be creative at times. So you do have a much larger bucket of creativity and ideas to pull from to drive it. I'm interested too, because I hear that same thing, Nathan, about, you know, well, this job, that job. And you're talking about this, Bob, but every job has a number of things that are exactly the same every time we do it. But we seem to reinvent the wheel on that all the time. So talk about where you're finding, because, you know, with your experience, you've got to be picking those out pretty quickly.
Coming from seeing what we're using. I mean, looking at the industry, looking at the SharePoint files, every single job, the moment we got a job award, we would be posting the next Excel spreadsheet. Let's copy and paste. Let's move it in here. And it was a change order log. Well, change order log became version 1, version 2, version 3, version 4. And as the organization hierarchy changes in construction, you're introducing a lot more players to the mix. You have assistant PMs, project managers, senior project managers, project executives. That is all within operations, let alone you got the foreman, superintendents on the other side of the mix. Everybody has their unique ideas and creativity, and it's good. And we want to learn from everybody. But that also, if you don't have standards in place to minimize that disruption, you're going to have 15 different versions of something. And that goes everywhere from RFI logs to how we're sending out the bid summaries and the sheets of actually in the estimating stages and moving all the way through prefabrication. And it's kind of like the new evolution of how we're doing things at the end of the day, but it's everything. It's as we move forward with it, how do we standardize to, instead of one template, which would be the ideal state that manufacturing is asking for, how about three? Can we go from 15 to 3? That would be a huge win in the industry overall, whether it's wherever it's at.
Yeah, 15 to 3. And then, you know, beyond that, what we always say, connected, right? Those spreadsheets are, and, you know, let's just clear the air. We go to litigation sometimes in our world. And if you're pulling changelog 4 and not changelog 5 to be your evidence, you could really be missing out. I mean, go all the way back, Nathan, if you remember this, Josh Kanner, when he talked about SmartVid and how it was built, It was built on the idea that there was $1 million video on a guy's phone that had something happened to that, they would have lost the lawsuit. And he went, oh my gosh, we got to have that stuff connected. There's no difference in that when it comes to items in a change log or RFIs that were answered, those kinds of things. And we're just building islands of them everywhere we go.
That's it. And it's almost like sweeping it under the rug at times, right? I mean, we can't, the number one tenet of lean is you got to have a scorecard, right? Yeah. If you go to a game and you don't know what the score of the game is, how are you going to play? How are you going to move forward with it? Yeah. And this idea of democratizing the data, as simple as it is, day one, I mentioned when I started at the contractor and we went through, where's your data set? And if it took more than 3 minutes to get me the data, something's wrong. Where's it going to be? And if I'm an internal office person asking that same question, do you think the field is asking that same question? And if you take more than 3 minutes to get the information to them, you're disrupting an entire schedule and project. So it's as simple as how do we get this information in the eyes just so we can start looking at it and making decisions off of that internally. So the spreadsheets are great. They serve a purpose. They move forward with it. But in the world we live in today, we have to shift it to another level so that we can database it, see the trends, get this information a lot quicker as opposed to saving it version 1.2 and, oh, I can't open it up because so-and-so's in it. And we need to stop kind of that direction.
Well, I want to go back a little bit because you said something really important there of, you know, that there's a single scorecard that we have to measure ourselves by, but how you go about filling out that scorecard could be any one of three or four, you know, again, we can have that argument at a company level of what are the options that people need to have? Not 15, but that, there are more than one way to do it. The hows, the prescriptive standards can be multiple, but the performance of how you're measured and the scorecard is what has to be consistent. And that's just such a principle that I think is not understood in this industry.
You're exactly right. So moving into this, so the number first thing that I did, let's talk about a cockpit. What's your dashboard? As you get into it in terms of your vehicle, you see those five levers that are actually going to make a decision, right? So as we sit down, the very first step that I would recommend and encourage everyone is sit down with leadership, pretend there's a dashboard in front of you. What do you need to see? And then the second question out of that is, what's the workflow? How do you make the decisions? How do you get that information and data? And Nathan, you're going to see 15 different ways and say, okay, now let's kind of leverage that. How do we get a digital workflow in place so that we can, here's a lean term, poke a yoke and dummy proof. What is that process of getting that information to the dashboard? So you keep the end in mind, we create a dashboard and we're able to kind of streamline that operations as opposed to people writing things on a piece of paper or on a whiteboard, et cetera, within a job site. So all these different areas.
I love that.
All right, we got to do this. It's not a three-letter acronym, but I have not heard poke yoke. What is that one?
Poke yoke. Yeah,
it's air proofing. So it's the ability. So as that when you put on your seatbelt and it chimes, that is a form of a poke yoke, right? It is reminding you that you got to do something. A required field in a form, in a QuickBase form, is a form of poke yoke. If you are helping to force the flow of data where it needs to get to, you're making it airproof.
Man, that is such a great analogy on the car one, because everybody in our business needs to, you know, they're always like, well, what about this? Well, what about that? Well, I've got dashboards and I don't know what I want. This is awesome. It's like, and I could see that breaking down to like, okay, talking to the project team. You're in the project team car. What controls do you need?
You know? Right. So, and how you identify another term for you. So the way you identify the poke yoke requirements is through a Gemba walk, right, Bob?
I love it. Now we're getting to it.
You know, you probably know more than me, like what, just define what a Gemba walk is. I just know the concept.
Well, I'll tell you this right now, what a Gemba walk is not. A Gemba walk is not a leader who just says, you know what, I'm going to show up at a job site and just walk around just to kind of put my face on the job site. Okay. Mm-hmm. That's not solving anything. A Gemba walk is actually getting in front of the person who's actually legitimately doing the job and taking your time to walk the footsteps to see what they're actually doing all the way through. Too many times I was on a Gemba walk in manufacturing where you show up and say, okay, what do you do? And the person verbalizes it. How about we go do a Gemba walk and you don't say a word and you say, go through your daily job. I want to see this. All right. But that's hard. We're human because we're actually having someone watch us. And I get that. But if we do it correctly, then we're going to see actually what the process is and where it's broken.
That is awesome. Cause it's the old manage by walking around that people got exactly wrong. Mm-hmm. Right? I remember back and Nathan, you might remember this, like my first, when I was a guest on this show, they said, how did you break this down? And I said, well, I got out of my office. I don't sit in my office. I go and I talk to the people, I sit with the people. But what I, and you know, James jumped on managed by walking around, and we had this, you know, discussion. And then I realized later that people weren't really, they, the leader would just go walk around.
Yeah.
That's not good. Cause you know, that's like the teacher walking by. Yeah. All the kids act normal.
Well, it's, right. it's the lion prowling, right? Yeah, there's some great analogies around, like the office place and even the open office workplace. And like, look at how desks are set up, where like the leadership is on the outside looking in at the people, where nobody's looking at their back, but you know, they get to look at your back. So you, someone's always over your shoulder. And that concept, is very different than, no, I want to observe and learn from you, which is much more empathetic, right?
Right.
Yeah, and takes time, takes a relationship. Like you said, Bob, it's going out there, talking, walking a mile in the shoes, realizing they're going to be nervous in the beginning, but over time, you're going to create this rapport, but also an understanding across the business, right? When they, the boss is walking around, and if the first thing you do is like, hey, you're doing these 9 things wrong. Well, everybody's going to act like the lion prowler.
And they're not going to want
future,
on the next job either.
Yeah. And in the future, if it's just like you're walking around, you're talking, you're creating, and you're going, hey, every time I go down there, you seem to be struggling with this. Like, can we walk through it? All of a sudden now, and that's what, you know, that's where I came from, was I didn't know anything about construction when I started.
Yeah.
So it was all like, for me too, the other one was, you want to find out how a process is working, flip the script and have them teach it to you.
Right.
Hey, teach me what you're doing, because as a business grows, we don't know everything. And you know what, as a leader, you might have done that job at some point.
That's right.
But if you ask and have them teach it to you, all of a sudden you're going to see, hey, maybe this has evolved into something I didn't think it was.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, the next piece of this that I see is when we have these discussions, we start doing the real Gemba walks. It begins to showcase the real workflows that this organization has created. And here's the kicker of it. That is the value add that company XYZ brings to the marketplace. And they want to own that. There is a pride, and there should be a pride, right? You have built your business up. You have developed these workflows that you feel are pretty good. Yes, they might have paper, they might have all this stuff, but this is your stuff. And so if we just go buy a software off the shelf and then force that change, you're losing your identity of who you are as a company. And there's a lot to be said with how do we actually create that workflow and allow these organizations to continue to thrive of who they are and not lose that identity.
Well, and let's not miss our perfect segue here, because the Gemba walks is where we identified the gray work, right? Like all these things, because they may not even know that what they're doing is a wasteful activity, because it's just what they've always done, right? You don't know what you don't know, and it goes both ways, right? And so I think, yeah, there's so much to observing that. I'm sure that's where a lot of the observance of that came out of.
and I'm sorry, but the idea just came to me. When I was in manufacturing doing a Gemba walk, I remember walking with a gentleman, and he would walk 5 feet over there, and then he would walk 10 feet, and then he walked 100 feet over there. And he just never thought to him like, oh, okay, this is wasteful. Like, I just literally walked the entire manufacturing floor. He enjoyed it. He got to talk to some people on the way and stuff like that. Never thought about it. And it was like, you know, this is wasteful. We got to figure out a better way to do this and move forward with it. But it's just, when you have your blinders on, you're doing that one way, you don't see it.
But see, my problem is analysis paralysis. I'm on the other side of it, where I overrealize these things to the point where I drive myself crazy. So like there's like some sort of middle ground that you have to reach that I feel like, Six Sigma black belts can do. And
that, that's another podcast that maybe my my wife would enjoy that one.
Yeah.
We'll
see. Yeah, that's construction therapy.
Yeah. Well, but you hit on a good one. There's two things that I want to link together, and some of it's from the Construction Dorks as well, but also from Jackson Huggard. So Nathan, you remember Jackson, when he first introduced some of these techniques, it was a little weird for his floor. So Jackson has a window restoration business for that. It's not even a restoration. That's not the word for it, but they take old windows, keep them with code. And it's really difficult to do. And they have a shop floor, Bob. And that was the first thing they did, is they started recording video. And they were a little trepidatious, but they saw the same thing. They saw this person walking all over the place. And then they approached it with, hey, we failed you. Like, you're walking all of that. Let's reposition this so you're not doing that as much. But you mentioned this, and Ryan Huggard mentioned this as well. There is a moment of optimum productivity we can't go past. They need that water cooler time. You want some of that time. And you can't be going 100% all the time. It's not possible.
That's right.
Right? So you can optimize so that you can get more productivity, but you don't want to get to the point where you just burn people out because they're trying to work. Because let's be honest, we don't work at 100% all the time. It's not possible. You can't keep that engine going that fast all the time.
Exactly.
So there's a balance.
Yeah. And one of my mentors used to say, if you just keep running that race car around the track, you're just going to burn the tires off. You got to come in for a pit stop. You got to understand that people need, and you got to factor that into the time in a daily utilization model. And the other tenet of lean that we got to remember is people. Respect for people is understanding they need a moment to breathe.
They need that moment to breathe. And I did it. Jackson Huggard and Ryan Hogan. It's so hard to get the two names that close. I honestly thought
that we got to have a panel or something with both of them on it. Because, between Jackson Huggard and Ryan Hogan.
You guys getting some plugs today.
Say that time fast.
Yeah. But I want to hone in on this idea of gray work, Bob. Because when everybody who listens knows, when I get my head on some new idea, I can't unsee it. And as soon as I heard this term gray work, and it does come from where you work at QuickBase.
Yeah.
I think it was invented like 2 years ago. It came up or something, and it just became this. So describe it for everyone and kind of dig into why it's been such a guiding light for you guys at the org.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's been incredible. And like you say, once you see it, you can't unsee it. Just to throw another metaphor out there, I mean, we have this slide that looks like an iceberg, and at the top of the center of the surface level, you see all of your day-to-day point use tools, right? I mean, the drawing is right in front of your face, the 3D models in front of your face, and maybe your financial ERP accounting systems right in front of your face, but that's not what makes up a company. All of the workflows from beginning to end, from the very first, from business development, through estimating, to pre-construction, to prefabrication, if you're doing that, all the way through, all has a workflow, and chances are they're going to be pretty entangled all the way through. And what's interesting is, and someone said this to me the other day, so I'm not going to take credit for it, but it is very true. Gray work exists because people want to find a solution. So they want to be able to create that Excel spreadsheet on the fly, because guess what? So-and-so is asking me for a KPI and a metric. I need to figure it out, but I need to use my Excel and the tools that are available to me at the moment for it. And then the aha moment, so all the different gray work is all those silos in between. How do you move it all the way through? Gray work could be a fillable PDF form. It could be an Excel spreadsheet. It could be an email. It could be a verbalize. It's everything that really kind of shifts us away from what the core of the workflow is. And every single piece of that is a data point. And as we learn, data is king. We make better decisions when we have the data at our fingertips. How long does it take to prefab a unit from the moment we get this to the moment we ship it out the door? It isn't just go build it and let's take the time of it. How about the workflow of the request, the planning? How about if we have to do sub-assemblies and we have to go out to another contractor to actually help with that? There are so many different workflows. How about creating a purchase order? We need an RFI. There's a schedule change. They start impacting along the way, and chances are it's done in gray work. So what I realized in using QuickBase is we can database this. And the person at the Gemba, the business process owner, has the ability. I am not a computer engineer, but I've been able to database and create these digital workflows that begin to capture these data points in between. And now we're branching together two different departments that typically only communicated either on the phone or walking down to the office or sending an email or, hey, go look at that spreadsheet and see what we got. Now, shifting that focus is, let's put the phone down for a second. Let's look at my dashboard. And what does my dashboard say? And is it telling me the true story of what's going through? And let's actually start becoming more efficient by capturing this information and making better decisions from it.
Isn't that great, Nathan?
I love it. I mean, it's such a great articulation of everything I've thought in my head and not been able to figure out how to actually do. So, bravo. This is awesome. It's all kinds of, and it's because it's coming from other industries too. And I think, you know, whether it's what you guys are doing or Andrew Madonna with Aquifer, other folks that are, you know, taking what they've learned from healthcare or manufacturing or other kind of like people centric, process centric, B2B to C industries, you know, these very large intertwined industries and making sense of it. So yeah, it's going to be a long battle, and we need more folks like yourself helping us out.
I think it's incredible. And to go back what I said before, like the helix, and let's connect this with lean. In the past, systems like this were almost looked at as like rogue IT, and it was like, watch out. All right. Well, if we think about it, IT is not doing a bad job. They're focused in on the high critical aspects that run the company overall. And kudos to them. They're doing a phenomenal job for it. Mm-hmm. Where is the strategy to help out the business process owner who's living it on a day-to-day basis, who just needs a solution maybe a little bit quicker, right? I don't have a year or two to go build something. So what tools do I have at my fingertips? I got Excel. I got Word. Let me go use that. What if you had QuickBase? What if you were able to spin something up in an hour and say, okay, could I use something like this? It's a prototyping tool that can evolve into your system of record for bridging together these workflows for it. And quite honestly, I haven't seen anything more powerful to get that information and that thought. Everybody, when I looked in construction, they're so creative. Their ideas come to fruition by using a system like QuickBase. Say, I've always been wanting to do that. You know how many times I've heard that? In the process, and we begin to build off of their value of what their workflow is and create it in record time, as opposed to waiting a year or two until IT is ready to work on the project for it.
Whenever you're talking about something as substantial as suicide awareness and as alarming as to statistics around construction being the second highest rates of suicide in industry, we'd be fooling ourselves if we thought that this was a one-player fix, meaning that it just takes one silver bullet or one easy button to solve this challenge. This is a multi-threaded challenge, if you will, and it's really something that is the responsibility of all of us to lean in, to raise awareness, to provide tools and resources, to up-level conversations we have around, you know, I mean, in construction, we're pretty much, hey, what's my job require me to get it done at any cost? Well, we now see what the outcome of that is. So I think it's important that we partner together to really have a unified voice around why mental health awareness is important, why it matters, and how we can frankly do better as an industry. It takes each of us leaning in to really create that.
It solves a couple of the big problems, being that IT person, but also leaning into, you're always overwhelmed. I can't solve every problem. And, you know, we had this whole shadow IT, and I think, you know, low code, no code got kind of socked in there with shadow IT. And it's like, no, this is a set of boundaries that meets our security needs. Right. But as somebody who does selection, and you guys can tune back a ways, but we had Anthony Cirodano on from Consigliere, yeah. And he's the one who introduced me to how they use QuickBase to identify gaps, to identify this gray work, which I didn't have a term for back then, and I do now, because I'm the kind of person, and I think there's a lot of IT people that sit down and you go, okay, I have an application that does this. It's rolled out. Why am I finding these spreadsheets, and what am I going to do? And you hit it, Bob. That was a friction point. There was some need that either we didn't train enough. So now I can like put my lens on it and go, okay, let's walk through it. Let's do my Gemba walk. Does it meet the need? Oh, okay, it does, but this person doesn't have the training for it. So we need to do some training. That's a solution. Oh, hey, wait, actually, we found one of the exceptions on these types of healthcare projects that are IPD, we need this type of reporting, and it's not core to the system we're using.
Bingo.
Okay, well, what do I do? And that's where Anthony taught me, hey, look, this is where we can bring in something that's got connected data to fill the gap and make something, because it's a real need. But now we have a new tool. Go ahead, Bob.
Yeah, and so going back to Pokiok, right? So Anthony's spot on. And so you go into an industry, and this is going back to construction, right? Is like every job's different. Well, I bet there's that 80% that is kind of right, right? Well, the moment you get into that 20%er, you save a spreadsheet because you say, okay, well, it doesn't, I got to tweak this to make it work for, what if you had a system in a database where in a dropdown you selected healthcare and it showed five other fields that you needed to track for it? You yep. kept the standard database, you kept the SOP, and you allowed for that growth and that agility of changing the workflow without missing a heartbeat for it. And you didn't have to call up a big company, hey, can we get on the docket? Can we make up this change? You made the change overall, and it was just invaluable.
Yeah, and there was the feature set. Like, I've been on a couple other shows where it's like, should you build it? Should you buy it? And it's like, well, nothing's ever built exactly for us. And I'm like, yeah, but there's ways to solve these gaps. There's ways to handle those exceptions in an enterprise focus that doesn't require that, lift of going to the software company and saying, you've got to change these things or add these things, or I can't use it because I can't use it on 20% of my projects.
Right.
There's never going to be 100%. This allows us to create a connected system that'll work for us in the long run. And if done right, with permissions, like this is the things right. I liked when I was talking to Anthony about this and then others, is there's permissions. So I can say, hey, listen, these are the things that you can do to make this thing work for yourself. So I can democratize that Gemba and PokeYoke. I can democratize that. And now I'm harnessing the creativeness and the problem solving of my field or my project managers or my accounting teams to find gaps, fill gaps, and go. Because ultimately, what we want to talk about is how much time are we losing trying to find that information? It's not just that I don't have it.
It is.
I mean, that was what was cool. Right. We talked about that study, yeah. Nathan. And Bob, you're up close to this. When you get to a contractor, what does that look like? You've said it a couple times about, just like, show me the information. But what are some of the impacts you're seeing longer term of like, oh, now I can find the information. What can I do?
Absolutely. And so I think it's just a matter of where's that information at the right time in the right place. I checked before, first question, can you run me this report in accounting? And it took 2 weeks to run that accounting. Well, that time in 2 weeks, you missed making the right decisions that could have impacted the material and the workflow. So there's an opportunity cost of missing that information, waiting to run those reports. That's one aspect of this. On the other aspect of it, something as simple as going to hunt down this information and where does it exist? If the field and foreman cannot find it in the hierarchy of the SharePoint site, you're clicking around hundreds or thousands of documents trying to find where it's at. And studies have been done. I mean, I actually think it's low. I mean, that's 10 plus hours a week. Multiply that by your salary, multiply that by how many people are actually doing it on a daily basis. I've heard that number get up to 20 hours a week. Because we're introducing these systems, one that might not be integrated, and you're actually almost hiring somebody just to go find the information, input it, but you're missing out on that productivity that the person needs to be doing their job as opposed to wasting that time moving forward with it.
Yeah. And that's, you guys can look at that study. We'll make sure we link it, and it's in a past news if you wanted to see it, but yeah. Just the astounding number of people who are searching for and spending time finding it. But what I thought was key is this, like 9 out of 10 people have some sort of doubt in their data. That means there's a level of accepted doubt in decision-making.
Yeah.
Look, there are times when you've got to lean on your gut. We're never going to have 100%, but 9 out of 10, that should be 25% of decisions are made with some gut feel because we're never going to have all of it, or 20%, but 80% of those decisions should be made really confidently that the data is right, that I have what I need to make an informed decision, because informed decision-making is the key, because the machine's never going to tell us what we want. You know what the client wants. Does the client want speed? Does the client want low cost? What do they value? The data can tell us how we make it. So that drives a lot of that. Where I want to go next though, Bob, is because you come from manufacturing, you spent time in construction, now you're on the software side, and we see this future of prefab, offsite. How do you see tools like this and processes like this impacting that shift to more and more fabrication? Because we're going to need it. Are you trying to reach the innovators and decision makers in construction technology? Then look no further than sponsoring the ConTech Crew. That's right, we're taking new advertisers. Email us at advertising@theconTechCrew.com to learn more.
There's an incredible impact. I mean, so this trend of prefabrication, developing out your own manufacturing facility and floor, developing your floor plan, what are the operations in it? The core competencies of contractors before was construction. We know how to build a building. We know how to keep it safe. We know how to do all this. But now you're introducing a new industry within an industry, manufacturing within construction. And the operations that it takes to run that operation is slightly different. And we need to understand what is the workflow and how we move forward with it. So whenever we design a model within Revit or Vim 360 or whatever you might be using, is how do you connect the pieces and get the information to the next person in line, like a Domino's ordering menu, all the way through from design, detailing, manufacturing it, to logistics, to stage it, to building it in the form and taking it to the field and installing it and tracking it all the way through. There's systems that say they do that. But again, going back to all that gray work all the way in between, it's more than just saying, here's the information. Did you build it? Did you ship it? Again, all of the in between, how did we estimate it? How much time is being spent building it? Are we going out for offsite assemblies? What if the assembly, now that we're building it, isn't what the field needs? And so what is interesting about it, as you mentioned, is doubt. A system like this that I've seen was building trust. So the first five pieces off the prefab line, the first articles of yield, might not be right, right? And so either we can throw up our hands and say, you know what, this doesn't work, this is all crap. Or what if we use a system like QuickBase to get that feedback in and we improve upon it and get that information for the next one and the next one and the next one until we form that trust, until we understand that what you're doing in terms of data, as well as the physicalness of a prefabricated unit, matches what I need in the field, because it's this brand new trend of what's coming into the industry. All of that has to mesh. It's not one or the other. It's not just a phone call. So capturing the time, everybody's asking, is prefab saving or costing us more money? How are you going to track all of the cost that comes into it? So we did build out a prefab tracker, actually, and moving it from left to right. And it was incredible to kind of see that evolution. And what was nice about it is version one was two tables that was kind of like, okay, the request, we got that in. It evolved over time to match what the workflow is that we wanted it to be, because our prefab shop is going to be different than your prefab shop, because we're going to be building different things, different workflows, and how does that move forward with it? And it was a nice add-on to our realm and ecosystem.
I love where this conversation is going. I think the one lean thing we haven't talked about is batch and pull, because I feel like that's the whole thing with prefab, right? Is that you're kind of starting to rethink. And this is a concept for me, like as a lean person, you think that you would just pull everything. Like everything should be just in time. Everything should be ready. Everything, here we go. And you know, batch it, everything that's batching has appeared to be waste. But I think, you know, the reality is that, I mean, shit, like look at Amazon and the way Amazon works. Like those giant warehouses are batching all of those things that have already been made that you're going to buy online so that they can pull them right away really quickly to get them to you.
Right.
But someone else had to batch them way ahead of time and do those large orders. We were talking about grocery stores earlier and all the economics of that, which we don't need to go into.
Yeah.
But I think, regardless of what change or what digital transformation you're trying to do within your organization or within the construction supply chain, like where have we previously batched that we're trying to pull? and where we maybe pulled before, where it's better to batch. I think that's always, you know, something that I think about in these situations. And I'm sure from a manufacturing mindset, you bring a unique perspective.
Yeah, it's interesting because, I mean, in construction, you are designing, right? I mean, there's a purpose between PLD, VDC. What are they bringing to it? And this piece of overhead conduit racking is going to be different maybe from that one. But can you actually set up a manufacturing line in your prefab shop, have enough look ahead of what is the schedule telling us, and can we build our systems around that to support it? If you think you're going to do that with just phone calls and looking at drawings online, you're not. You need a system to see what is forthcoming, and then how do we arrange, and do we have enough manpower and resources to supply the manufacturing shop of what we have at prefab as well. So leveraging all these lean techniques, it's not one or the other. It's how do we bring it all together?
Yeah, because the reason you would batch is to protect against the natural variability of the system that you're going into. And
exactly right.
What's more variable than construction?
That's right. So going back to what is that acceptable tolerance, right? Is it truly every single piece? Or can we plan ahead for the job of saying, okay, this area in wing, for floor 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, all the way up, if we're building a high rise or whatever it might be, now you can. Now we can actually set that up and bake that in terms of the schedule. Are there instances where there's going to be a custom? Absolutely there is. So we need to address that and obviously make sure there's wheels on all of your tables in the manufacturing floor.
See, that's where too, I kind of want to talk about how these things work together, because you mentioned it. There are tools that are out there and built for fabrication that do a lot. And some of them say, hey, we do these other things.
Right.
But the key to that is those are usually not core to those systems. And this is where I think the industry as a whole, embracing the space that they live and then connecting the spaces in which they don't, can really be powerful. Because if we can take any one of those, you know, fabrication systems and optimize them for what they do, automatic spooling, you know, looking for problems, you know, working with and sending to the cutters and the stations, et cetera, and really helping us do maybe layout of our floor or our production line.
Yeah.
But then you're talking about schedule impact. You're talking about things that are happening outside or in the field, periphery. If they're trying to eat that whole cake, then they're going to dilute what they do as a whole. So this is where we've got to say, listen, this is what you do. This is your lane. And this is what's so valuable to us, right? The ability to cut waste, the ability to automate the processes through detailing and spooling, et cetera, are what we need. And they are unique, right?
Yeah.
It is not unique to fill out certain parts of a spreadsheet. That's not unique. But connecting that data and understanding when it's going to impact something we're doing on the line and being able to integrate with those systems, that's what we're talking about. That's what I wanted to get across, is it's not like we're talking about one ring to rule them all.
Yeah.
We're talking about a fabric to connect them all that makes them all more powerful than the sum of their individual parts. But then, I mean, I don't know, I come from the software world. So from a lean perspective in the software world, if I can get rid of tertiary things that are annoying to my customers, I love my customers. I do. But I can't solve all of their problems. But there's a lot of times when I wish, would somebody solve these problems for me so I can focus on what I'm doing? And I think this is what low code, no code provides an opportunity to do for people.
Yeah, I think that's well said. I mean, there's no doubt. As you look at these prefab shops that are being built too, the evolution of it gets interesting. So for the ones that are just starting off, it's going to be your workflow. You're going to be supplying your job sites. But what I also see is for the ones who've been doing it a while, you begin identifying other revenue streams. And so what I mean by that is you start working with maybe manufacturers to sub-assembly and create these lines to keep your manpower and your resource loading level as you continue, while you're also supplying prefabricated units to the job site. Well, now you just introduced two different workflows. You introduced a P&L into the system, essentially, of how are we working through it. your system needs to support all those different data streams as well. So not to go too off on a tangent, but are we choosing the software that can grow and scale with us? Because, or you now have to have a separate software for each of those different lines of business.
No, I mean, just, I think to maybe wrap a bow on this, maybe we need to retitle this, Jeff, the art and the science of digital transformation. Cause I feel like so much of all this lean stuff and everything I wrote down here, you know, diagnosis versus delivery, because I think going back to that Gemba walk conversation is where you diagnose, but it might not necessarily be in anyone's best interest to deliver those findings immediately to that person during that Gemba walk, right? Like there is very much an art form to the delivery, especially if that change is like the person is more or less doing it wrong. Not that probably because they were never taught that way or all this, but there's just so much of that human side that you have to just be overly sensitive to in that diagnosis of, are we changing the tool out? Are we changing the process? Or are we essentially changing the people, meaning education or training or otherwise? And that how you would approach each of those is a different process for those individuals. So I think this is, I've learned a ton from this conversation. Thank you.
To that point, I'm sorry, just one more anecdote here, is that as we're creating these prefab shops for contracting, we're figuring it out. We're working it through, which means right away, if you choose a software, you haven't even figured out your process half the time. So what if we worked in parallel? What if it was parallel development where you're understanding and you're writing your standard operating procedure, but you also understand the technology that you're building with and you understand the capabilities of what that technology can do, because that could impact maybe your workflow as well. You're building the next evolution of what that value stream is to your organization. And it's yours. It's your intellectual property. It's what makes you unique of creating it for it. So software like QuickBase can help you write your SOP is what I'm trying to say, if it's not fully vetted out yet.
And that is the power of that process of digital transformation, is understanding the power of software and technology, but really digging into the people.
Yes.
And then the unique processes that you're building as well, right? Like everybody... all the contractors out there, there's some that compete head to head on certain things, but there is so many different markets, so many different verticals to be in. Are you specializing in data centers? Are you specializing in healthcare, laboratory sciences? All those workflows and all the fabrication needed for those is different. The scale, the complexity, it's so different. And every one of our trades is... then again, unique underneath. And then there's a moment in time too, where those ecosystems need to be connected together as well. So I think that's the powerful ability for all of those things, and which is lean, to come alongside and really help take steps forward in that process. So I think we have our mic drop moment here. Bob, I knew it was going to be fun to have you on. I didn't know it was going to go here, but this is awesome, man.
I was excited when you offered. I look forward. Hopefully we can continue this. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. And I think there'll be lots of conversations of this going forward, but don't worry, guys. He's sticking around for the construction technology news of the week. Back in 2020, I heard about a new software platform called Join. Within minutes of seeing Join, I knew it had the power to revolutionize collaborative project delivery. In fact, I was so sold on Join that I joined the team as its industry evangelist. Many trade shows and podcasts later, Join is now used by 50% of the ENR top 30. Why? Pre-con and ops leaders at DPR, Bolt, McCarthy, Barton Mallow, Clark, and others say that they like Join because it does two big things: collaborative, trackable decision-making, and awesomely simple visuals. Want to learn more about the power of Join? Go to www.join.build/demo to learn about how better gets built. All right, Nathan, what do you got for us?
So I am not normally one to bring up the AI articles, but since I noticed you didn't have any, Jeff, I'll bring one in. I actually saw our friend James Benham was speaking at CFMA last week and brought up this article. It is from last year, but I'd never heard of it before. From the Analytics India magazine, but Breaking the Silence, LLMs Decode Enigmatic World of Animal Language. So in short, some scientists through the Earth Species Project, or ESP, are aiming to solve this challenge of, can we talk to dogs, or basically map the language? You know, if we can map all these other languages and create all these translations, why can't we do that with animals? So I thought this was kind of an interesting, because again, communication and how we create communication is such an important thing. I did pull a couple things I thought were interesting from this article. So I'll read here. While it seems natural to allow NLP algorithms to find the structure of animal communication, the problem has many more facets. So the most basic pitfall is that noises are simply just one of the modalities that animals use to communicate. So again, visual and tactile and all these other ways that, again, we communicate as humans. That's why face-to-face and video chatting is... can communicate so much more than just an audio communication over the phone. But again, I think there are uses for each of those. So ultimately, they're getting pretty darn close, it sounds like, to essentially building an audio chatbot for animal communication. So, you know, your dog can tell you, you know, what it saw last week. So I guess just beware. Anyone that has a dog or a cat, well, it may be watching and can tell you what it saw.
Well, that's, I can tell you this. Yeah, that's scary. James used to say on stage all the time, are we headed for Terminator or WALL-E? Right. And yeah. He would always land on WALL-E.
Yep. Yep.
Well, I'm going to challenge you now, James. It's Up meets WALL-E is the future. So our dogs are going to talk to us and we're all going to drive around on little scooters. I just don't see Terminator having a talking Terminator dog. No, actually, this one's interesting because we just saw recently with some of the OpenAI multimodality, and communication goes far beyond the written word. Oh. It just is not. That's why AI is going to struggle so much to truly become human in that respect, or sentient in that respect, because there is so many other things than our language itself, just our tonality, our facial expressions, our body languages, other triggers. But this is pretty crazy that it can take all of that in. Do I really think it's going to end up at, you know, where your dog's talking to you and telling what it saw around the corner? I don't think we're going to get there. But honestly, you know, one of the things, you go to a doctor, you talk to them, they test you. There's this multimodality of diagnosis. Well, now we're going to be able to apply some of that technique for a veterinarian to catch things sooner, or help in speeding up diagnosis, to save your pets, to save our farm animals, to save. I mean, I was just looking at it and I'm thinking, like, we are seeing a ton of diseases that are knocking out, you know, whether it's avian flu or things we see in cattle. What if, you know, we could pick up on those things sooner, or even in our wild population? We've seen a couple of wild populations, you know, quickly die out due to something that took us a long time to figure out. Well, what if now, from, you know, all the cameras and all the things that we have, we could catch those things sooner? Okay, this is where that's some powerful deals. Bob, I'm wondering, what does this bring for you?
I'm writing down here, Nathan. When you mentioned that, I wrote down gray work within the canine community. And everything, I'm going to go back to QuickBase and I'm going to start talking about, like, if we can figure that out, Jeff, that if they're sick, if there's a noise or something, what are those workflows that come into it? And I think we have a business opportunity on the forefront.
I love it. But yeah, no, definitely the veterinarian, I think, seems like the first use case, you know, legitimate use case for that.
But, or I'm hungry, or I need to go to the hydrant down the street. I mean, how does it connect with your Internet of Things that we can do?
You know, what's interesting, I actually have a friend from Stanford he was at UCLA doing his grad research, but has a little TEDx talk. They developed an app that will listen to baby cries for deaf parents.
Wow.
To be able to detect from the cry.
There you go.
Am I hungry? Am I tired? Did I just poop? Yeah, that's really interesting.
I believe it. Yeah.
Yeah. So half of it's just knowing the use case, right? Like, what are the use cases that are needed for this? What are the problems that this can solve? Because it can solve so many things.
Right.
But if we're not willing to talk about the problems that are out there, then we don't know where to point it.
Yeah. It's incredible.
I didn't think about that. That's awesome. All right, Nathan, all right. What do you got for us?
So I pulled this one off of Construction Dive. Those of you who know Jim Gentile and others have spent some time at Lendlease, huge company. I remember the Oceanside project in LA was a really popular one, which I just noticed they had left in like 2021, but they just announced this week that they are completely exiting all international construction. If you don't know, Lendlease is an Australian-based company. So they are headed back down under, and basically getting out of all their New York, all their LA, all their London projects, basically freeing up about $3 billion US in capital to focus on improving their domestic operations. So I think it means a few things for large capital construction in our industry, whether you're one of their competitors or you either currently work for one of their competitors or work for Lendlease, because I'm sure a lot of folks aren't necessarily going to move to Australia. They're probably just going to find new jobs with other companies around here. So interesting little shakeup here as we look at kind of the larger macro moves of the industry. Jeff, your thoughts?
Well, two things there. One, yeah, there's a huge growth opportunity. There's going to be a huge group of people on the market, really talented at really large scale projects, which look, we have a problem with getting enough of those people now. So I don't think them finding homes or any one of our, US based or otherwise construction companies won't struggle necessarily to consume that. The thing that I started thinking about when I saw this though, Nathan, was we've looked at Lendlease for quite a bit of time around technology and innovation and what they are powerful and capable of doing. That's a void in the market. I'm going to be interested in seeing who fills and how they use this to tie it together with something Bob said earlier, like the strategic advantage, the value, the not just the marketing, but setting yourself apart from your competitors. Technology and your ability to innovate and do things differently and provide better is a strategic advantage. And this creates a whole new gap where somebody gets to be the leader, I think. I mean, they've led in quite a few areas.
Or does it say that trying to be different and trying to go outside of the mold can result in you getting hit in the face? There could be many messages out of this. I don't know.
Ooh, that's one we don't want, but I imagine we'll hear.
Yeah,
we don't need any more naysayers in our world. Bob, I'm interested in your take on it because this is a big one. I mean, they're all over the place. So to go back to Australia, although if I'm an Australian contractor, I'm shaking in the boots. Because they're Ollie coming. They're coming for work.
Yeah, they are. Well, like you said, I mean, Two spots there, not to beat the horse, but it could be, like you said, two steps back to, or one step back to take two steps forward overall. So are we re-looking at our operations? Are we re-looking at our systems? Did we grow too quickly? How does that expand and contract? What systems do we have and use across the board? And it begins to put focus in on what does that look like from an international operations standpoint and how are we communicating across the board? But yeah, really curious. I mean, the labor pool, is always something. We were just talking about that yesterday internally about how do we support the construction. They're going to get scooped up, right? I mean, they're going to be there. Mm-hmm. To me, I think it's more about what is that operations? How is that going to look?
Yeah, that will be fascinating too, to see the expertise go to new places and probably be unlocked a little bit too. A company that big, no offense to them, but a company that big has to have a lot of structure. And a lot of structure can limit that creativity in some respects. So there is an opportunity for either some of our current ones to grow or, entrepreneurial time. It's time for some of them maybe they know their markets. They know what's going on. They know how it works. They saw the problems. Start your own company that is different and approaches those problems and those clients differently and meets them where they are. Man, this will be a fun one to watch. And I hope somebody out there, one of my, people who likes to do studies and monitor these things and write it up, follow that path, because this is going to be an interesting case study for us as an industry to see this happen, because it's pretty rare.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of that. I think over the next few weeks, we'll talk a lot about things like that. So.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. All right. What do you got, Jeff? Well,
great stuff. I am going back to one of our good friends. I was excited to see her release an article. Sala Eckhart. It's just on LinkedIn, but it is a LinkedIn article. Integrated workflows, a must in the digital transformation of the AEC industry. When you're looking for those minds that, you know, take Bob, what you're talking about fundamentally, and take it to epically new levels, that's Sala. You know, she's giving us a first. I love this because she starts with credit to the industry. We have come a long way from pen and paper in many different ways. You know, people forget that CAD was digital paper and it was a big advancement. And, you know, now we're moving into BIM and dynamic and seamless collaboration. And a lot of the possibilities for taking BIM and open BIM in particular and really applying it to a process to make advancements in looking for, and these are the types of things as we talk about, what do we automate for? We automate for what Alexis McGuffin, when she was on, called tripwires, right? When we see X, Y, and Z, it leads to a safety event. We need to focus on that and get ahead of it, right? This is the same kind of thing. It's automating the verification of what's being installed through Open BIM and then looking for those problems and opportunities to look, not everything we fabricate and put in is perfect. But, you know, we talked about this a lot. If I catch it on the first floor, it's far different than if I catch it on the 10th,
right?
Because now I'm too far out of tolerance and I have maybe structurally impacted or maybe caused much bigger problems. And she, you know, she's talking about some of the capabilities that we're going to see and also bringing me to a new product. I love new products. So Verify 3D's in here. It's a model checker that has then verification from the field. So this is pretty interesting stuff. Nathan, I'm wondering if you had some time to look at it and what you're thinking.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just looking at this stuff in here. I mean, I think she's, you know, hitting on all the key folks. I'm going to have to spend some more time looking at Verify 3D. I think it's the whole, I mean, just BIM as such a large animal for this industry. I feel like this, the whole notion of if you build it, they will come. It's kind of, you know, but we are getting closer. And I think where we're at now is, I think she even makes a point here around, you know, you can choose whatever you software you want as long as it complies with Open BIM. And so the next question becomes, okay, so what's the business case for those individual softwares to then, you know, comply with these standards. I think if you're in Europe, they go, well, it's a government mandate. It's coming from the top. So you have to, just like GDPR and everything else, and kind of taking that approach. You know, otherwise it would be more of the, well, enough users are demanding it. So therefore we'll dedicate resources to building it. So I think we all know where we need to be. It's just that whole, you know, following the money of how the heck we're going to get this work done.
Bob, I'm wondering your thoughts.
Yeah, I think what it sounds like, and I'd have to look into a little bit more, but if it's true, I mean, it sounds like it's almost like a clash detection that's out there and they're verifying the model. Is it right? And my mind instantly goes to like QAQC process, feedback, punch list items. And these tools and solutions are excellent and they're all coming out there. And I'm curious, how do we work with any gray work that might succumb to this in terms of, okay, if one project has these issues, what if we created a database that has all the projects so that somebody back in the office, like a quality manager, QAQC manager, can be making educated decisions across the board as opposed to looking at one job, executing the punch list and calling it a day all the way through with it. We're capturing all this data today. Let's make use of it. There's reasons. There's other things that we can be doing. Yes, solve the fire. Go create it. What else can we use this data for overall?
Yeah, and how can we prevent it from creating new gray work, but also funnel that opportunity? That gray work's an opportunity for us to, if it's creating punch list items, if it's generating things for the field to do, we can connect it to other systems to do that. But also then over time, You know, but we don't worry. Nathan brought an AI article, so I don't have to bring AI in. But also it gives us an opportunity to analyze from our different data buckets. And that's what I think reality capture people forget, and things like this, people forget that just because we're doing it in 3D isn't the full circle to give us the true value of 3D modeling. The true value of 3D modeling is analyzing the as-built, the reality, and then the process of how we got there and the problems that existed while we got there. So this is where integrating those standards, integrating those systems, and collecting that data allows us then to model in the future through AI and other tools, deep learning, whatever it might be, to get more prescriptive and predictive around what might happen next and how can we optimize for it.
Yeah. Well, and on that point, I'm just looking at the Verify3D website right now. And essentially what they're doing is they're not just doing the clash detection, which I would call design coordination, are things hitting each other, but also that rule checking for is the content of it itself, of the SKU number or the size of it or the weight of it or the name of it, is all that stuff correct, which is a whole different kind of level of quality and verification that is really needed if we're going to go and ask the model questions and do AI on these things. So yeah, it's going to be a slow, arduous process to clean up all this model data. But I think the more we've got tools like Verify3D and others, we can use QuickBase to connect them all together and solve the world.
Well, I'll go a little further. As long as we have people like Sala to push us there, that's the key. We need thought. We need people who think that way and push us to be better. So thanks for that one, Sala. Now I have a bone to pick, gentlemen. I have a bone to pick. The BBC. Well, first I'm going to give a shout out to my IT Brew team. I love the IT Brew newsletter. If you're an IT person, you got to check it out. I get it every day. It keeps me up, but it is interesting when once in a while my two worlds collide. And IT Brew put this link to a BBC article on why technology has not transformed building. And the opening line is, if you took a worker from a 1920s construction site and transported them to a present day project, they would not be that surprised by what they saw, according to Sam O'Gorman. And I'm going to tell you that Sam has something to sell you, because Sam, you're full of it. I am freaking tired, and I'm using good terms because you might be listening to this with your children in the car, and I want you to continue to be able to, but you are full of it. We just talked about BIM. We just talked about CAD. We just talked about prefabrication. We have talked about the technology tools and the innovation. Look, Sam, look at the things around you. There is no way a 1920s construction worker would show up on site and imagine that we can build the stadiums, that we can build the bridges, that we can build the infrastructure. Yeah, if you want to look at a house, sure. We do a lot of that similarly. Although if you want to look at the connected house and the amount of electricity and the amount of IoT and the amount of those things that go in, you're wrong. And this is McKinsey continuing to whip our industry and not understanding how to come alongside and work with us. You guys have been touting this stuff forever, and it's not going anywhere because all you're doing is beating us with a stick and you're not actually coming in and helping us in any way, shape, or form. So from my perspective, this is a load of crap. And it is time for construction in the built environment to change the view, get out ahead of it, and start showing people and showing off the different innovations and things that we have done, because we are not what we used to be. We don't kill people like we used to. Yes, we have safety problems, but look, we have those problems in manufacturing. We have those problems in other places. Accidents happen. Getting to zero is almost impossible. But we are improving. And I guarantee you, a 1920s worker, their mind would almost fry in short circuit. So I'm going to pass my soapbox over to you, Nathan, because that got my blood pressure up.
I mean, I'm just going to pull one of the quotes from the very end, because I always like to see, okay, at the very end of this, ultimately, what are they trying to say? You know, however more can be done. A big challenge is that the construction industry is highly fragmented, making it hard to implement uniform technological advances. So it's like they're saying the whole story, but they're delivering it in a way that is sensationalized and what any marketing journalism, how they have to get their clickbait. So I think it's an unfortunate reality of these different industries. And I wish we would talk more about that fragmentation and the root causes of that fragmentation and what those that are outside of the construction industry and the owners and government side need to do to help us help ourselves. So I don't necessarily disagree with parts of what's said here, but I do not like the sensationalism. So I'm with you, Jeff.
Yeah. And don't get me wrong. We have plenty of room for improvement. Yes, we do. We can get better. We can get far better, but the reason they haven't come in and solved it is because it's far more difficult than they think. And so, Bob, I'm interested because, come in from manufacturing over to construction. Do you think a 1920s worker is going to show up and think, oh, I can do this?
Well, when you read it, the first thing I thought was, we're not going to bring them to the job site. We're actually going to put a virtual reality headset on them and let them walk around the job site and see it in virtual reality, right? The technology is there. It needs to go a little further, in my opinion. Let's hone it back from that. Our contractor decided we're going to get rid of all of our drawing tables, get rid of it. So when you walk into the job trailer, you see TV screens all across the board. The role of what that foreman and superintendent has changed dramatically and for the better. And there's a lot of contractors out there that are really doing a lot of good things out there that have completely changed this industry in over just the last few years too. And it is going to rapidly change. And we got the tools and systems out there. We just need to navigate through this, all the different solutions, and let's bring the data together. So
I really like it. You two brought it back rationally from my irrational. I let my blood pressure go up a little bit.
You're not wrong. You're just passionate.
It's passion.
Yes. It is passion. And with that, man, Bob, Nathan, thank you for sitting down. Bob, it's always awesome to sit down. I hope this isn't the last of sitting down and working with you.
Absolutely. Anytime. It's been great. And really looking forward to the future and what this whole industry has to hold. So please reach out.
Yeah, we got to do all more. Right. Yeah, more. Always more lean to be talked about.
Always more lean. Always more fun. Nathan, always a pleasure to have you join me on the microphone.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you for tuning in today to Geek Out for our interview with Bob Sali. To read all our news stories, learn more about our guests, and to listen to the show, visit thecontactcrew.com. This is The Contact Crew signing out. Until next time, enjoy the ride and geek out.